I'm Doug, I'm an alcoholic, and I love chairing this meeting because it tells me exactly what I have to do to chair this meeting. I don't have to tell you anything more about myself other than what it says right here. And the requirements for chairing the meeting at the Central Orlando Group Saturday night speaker meeting are 1 year of continuous sobriety, which I have. My sobriety date is June 28th, 2004, and that's by the grace of God. Have Central as your home group, which it is, and attend a group conscience meeting, which I try to do as often as possible, but I had to do it at least one time to get this meeting. So if you're out there and you have a year of sobriety and Central is your home group, this is the best way I know to show your group how much you like it and to do service work. So I recommend this for everybody. And for me, I am an alcoholic, and I have worked the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous with a sponsor who worked the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous with another sponsor. And there's a lineage that goes down the pike. And like I said, I haven't had a drink since June 28, 2004. For that, I'm eternally grateful, and that's enough out of me. And a reminder, the group asked me to remind you to turn your phones off, refrain from moving around while the speaker's sharing. Now I must introduce the speaker. Out of all the speakers that I've gotten this month, Mike is the one that I know the best. I go out to eat with Mike at least once a week. We have the same sponsor. Mike does things that our sponsor has told him to do. I, on the other hand, but one thing our sponsor always said was to pick up the phone and call another alcoholic every day. And I want you to know, Mike picks the phone up and calls an alcoholic every day, because I'm the alcoholic that Mike calls every day. And I don't know what it does for him, but I'll tell you what, it saves my life. It's a wonderful thing to have someone call you, even on your good days, your bad days, your medium days, just knowing, at 4 o'clock, Mike's going to call me, and it's going to be okay. And that's the kind of service work Mike does, and I'm really interested in hearing the story, though I've heard it before, and I want you to give a good, central, warm welcome to Mike.
I'm Mike, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mike.
The last time I had a drink was April 22nd, 2009. While I have shared my story before, this is the first time I've shared my story here, and this is my home group, and this is a very special thing for me because I care very deeply about this place. One of the things that I'll share right away before I get into it is that I used to get this nervous feeling just even driving here. I'd start to get cold sweats, and now when I just know that I'm coming to this place, I know my heart starts to slow down and I get this sense of calm, and it's a really amazing thing that actually happens to me. So let's see, I'm going to attempt to share my experience, strength, and hope with you by telling you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. First of all, I'd like to just give you a little bit about my background, my family history. I was born in Georgia, 1970, on an army base, and shortly afterwards my dad got shipped to Vietnam, and my mom and I moved up to Indiana where I was raised, both my parents came from very poor families. As soon as dad got back, he went to college, got a degree, and soon after that we weren't poor again, and I really never remember not having anything or everything that I needed growing up. We have always had a house, clothes, food, pretty much everything I needed, and a lot of love. My parents didn't really fight very much at all. and they didn't really drink very much at all. My dad's not an alcoholic. I don't think my mom's an alcoholic. But it's in both sides of the family, and my mom's side is riddled with alcoholics a lot. The first time I remember drinking, tasting alcohol, was at my grandpa's house. He was the superintendent of a prison in Indiana, and he lived in the prison superintendent's house, and it had a full party basement that had a full bar with tables, benches, mirrors, and hundreds of bottles. And we used to go down there and play. And I may have been 10 or 11. My cousin and I, we would go down there and we'd like taste bottles to try to be cool. And I don't remember ever getting any effect from that. Just thinking that we were being bad and getting away with it. And I remember another time when I was maybe about 12. I lived in the country in Greencastle, and a friend of mine had stolen some of his dad's alcohol and put it in a couple mason jars, and we drank a little bit of that, and I remember kind of feeling a little funny, but it didn't really have that big feeling that I'd later get from it. And then when I was 13, my best friend was 16, and my other best friend was 15, and we lived out in the country, and so your friends were whoever lived within a mile or so of you. And we liked to camp and fish, and my parents trusted me enough to go camping with them. And we loaded up with beer and all of our camping gear, went out. I had a great time, what I remember. I remember having some fun, then I blacked out and woke up. I had used a roll of paper towels as my pillow, and I came to, and it was swollen about this big with vomit, and I had it all over me. And in the tent, it was hot, and I just remember that I had a really good time, I thought. And so I continued to do that, and I didn't get caught very often, because they knew we loved to fish and camp, and that's what we did, but we also loved to drink. And that friend also was the youngest of many kids, and his parents didn't care, so I could go over and spend the night with him and get drunk, and they didn't really care, and we would do that. It started mostly on the weekends, and then as I kind of got more into high school, it started going during the week too. Still not really any consequences. I wrecked a lot of cars, but I somehow managed to get away from all that, the trouble that's associated with it. In school, I was a very good student. I was very into sports. I was an academic all-state in football, and I was very into... I was kind of in a lot of different groups. I wanted everybody to like me. I was in the math club and a performance jazz choir, baseball, football. I was friends with all the gearheads. We had hot rods you worked on. I was friends with the potheads. I was friends with the Grateful Dead heads and the preppies and just all these groups. But the one thing that when I look back on it is, in every one of those groups, I always found the people who drank to hang out with. And they all had them. Well, of course they had at least one, because I was in them. And part of me, I just know that even before I did have that first drink, before I felt that first effect and things felt okay, I never quite felt right. Looking back, I always thought that people were out to get me or making fun of me. I was very sensitive, and got my feelings hurt real easily. And then when I would drink, that would go away. I felt okay. I felt, like I could dance, I could do just about anything, and I didn't think that everyone was out to get me. And so, I wanted to drink more because I wanted that feeling, and I did. I made it through most of high school without getting in a lot of trouble. I went to college, and kind of the same thing, except I found a whole fraternity of people that like to drink like I did. And my first semester, I still studied hard and got good grades. And then I joined the fraternity in my second semester. I got a 1.7. And I, continued to get by, got a degree, and, got out of college and got a job. By the way, it took about 10 years after I graduated before anyone ever saw my transcript. So they didn't know whether I was a 4.0 student or a student that I was, which was much less than that. But I got a job. I got married to a girl that was my sweetheart in college, and we had a baby a few years after we had moved down to Orlando. I went to school in Indiana. And I kind of slacked off the drinking for a little while. I'm not sure if it was I thought that I was supposed to, live a certain type of life, but it tamed down after college. And this girl drank with me in college. We partied together, and she almost quit when we got out of school for a while. And then we had a baby, my only child, who's 16 now, and things. We had never lived as adults together outside of school, and we weren't very compatible. And she started doing stuff, and I started drinking more, and pretty soon, and I was very selfish and self-centered. I didn't care about anybody but me, and that didn't go over very well in a partnership and a marriage. So pretty soon, things went sour, and we got a divorce, and I... My drinking went to a whole new level. Shortly after, I found another woman who I fell in love with, and we moved in together. And she partied with me, we partied together for several years. We got married a little over 9 years ago. She's still my wife today. We had a lot of years of the happy hours and the parties and doing that kind of stuff, and not a lot of trouble. It seemed to work out. One thing I forgot to mention is in between those wives, when I started drinking heavier, I got a DUI and came to some meetings. It was mid-90s. I think it was in the old building, a couple, because I had to. I got off. An attorney got me off, but I still had to do a couple meetings, and I did those. I got it signed. I figured out you get it signed and never went back. Back to my current wife. We drank a lot for many years together, and I started to get worse, and I started to have consequences. And so I would try to quit, and I would sometimes be able to quit for a couple days or a couple weeks, and then I would go back into it, and I would make promises and all that sort of thing. And as my drinking got worse, hers got less and less. And we got to a point where she just pretty much quit drinking, and I was going through phases of drinking every day and then swearing it off and trying to quit. And when I would quit, I was worse. I was the alcoholic without a solution, and I was really unbearable. I was full of that restless, irritable, and discontented personality. I was overwhelmed with that. I could not control it and enjoy it. If I wasn't enjoying it, I was out of control. That's that old saying. And I would go back to it each time, it would get worse. And now I wish, being an engineer, I wish I could have plotted this data to look at it now, because it I got to the point to where I would get off of work early, a couple hours earlier than my wife due to my schedule. Every day I would go home and I would get a 12-pack and a 6-pack, and I would drink the entire 12-pack. I would crush up all the cans. I would put it in a plastic bag. I would put it in the trunk of my other car, which was in the garage, and open a beer or two out of the 6-pack. By the time my wife got home, I'd be like standing there with all that, and she'd see that I've had 2 beers. And that was the game that I played for a long time. And I would be passed out by 9, and then I would get up at 5:30, go to work, and do the same thing every day. And then I would have to eventually go out and find a place to get rid of an entire trunk full of crushed beer cans. And then something terrible would happen, a major consequence, and I would swear it off, and I would go back to the trying to control it. And it was a really sad, miserable life. The depression, you know, was overwhelming. And I'd get to the point to where I would have that ah moment, that feeling of the first of the drink, for just the window would get so short, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, and then I'd just start crying. I mean, you know, sitting up by myself crying, trying to drink anything I could as fast as possible to get to turn the lights out. And that was my life for a long time. And you know, one of the things I did when I was trying to control it that really can give you an idea of the insanity was I tried to do I heard that doctors say that you could have two drinks a day and it was good for you. So I said, I'll just have 2 points a day. And then if I didn't drink for 4 days, then on the fifth day I could drink 10 beers. And that didn't work real well because I was crazy without a solution for 4 days and then I was drunk. And it wasn't the kind of drunk I wanted to be. It was like I couldn't drink like I wanted. And it slowed me down for a little bit. But then I started, like everything else, I started to bend the rules. And I realized that I had to mow the lawn, and that was a point. And then I would take the trash out, and that was a point. And pretty soon I was back to just getting wasted every day, and I just had a really nice-looking lawn and a clean house. It just didn't work. And I'm going to give you just a couple more examples of my drinking experience. And the reason I do that is so that you guys know that I belong here, that I'm an alcoholic, and we can get that out of the way, and then I'll move on to what happened. You know, one of the things that happened was I remember when I was not in my drinking 18 beers a day phase, I was in my hiding it from my wife phase. I had poured from the night before a cup full of alcohol, and I think it was vodka, I don't remember, it was clear, I know that, into one of those plastic beer keg cups in my fridge, because the night before I had an opportunity to dispose of all the evidence, so I'd taken the bottles and thrown them all away, and I had this cup in my beer fridge in the garage. I was the only person that had a key to the garage. And that morning I'd gotten up around, 6 a.m. or whatever it was, but I was out there and I was going to drink that cup to go ahead and get rid of the restless, irritable, and discontent feeling so that I could live the rest of the day and try to sneak drinks whenever else I could. And I remember being out there trying to get that stuff down, and I remember going down and it coming right back up into the cup, a different color. And that was all the alcohol I had. I remember I put it back in the fridge, and I did work for about 15 minutes. I went back and drank it. Now, you would think that that might make me think normal people don't do this, but I did. And another thing, one that's more scary than anything was my wife was out of town, and when she would go out of town is when I would really, really go off the deep end, because I just felt like, you know, that the teacher was away or something, and I was out walking. I was trying not to drive because I knew I'd get obliterated, so I'd walk to a bar, and I remember coming to, I made it back to my house. I was on top of the bed, still had my jeans on and shirt, a huge pool of blood, and a bloody knife next to the bed, and a big hole in my knee, like a puncture wound. And I woke up at 6 o'clock. She was going to get in later that night, and so I'm like the good alcoholic I am. I tried to clean myself up the best I could, wrapped it up in some tape, and I went to work, thinking I would get home and clean it when she got home, and not even knowing what happened, or, you know, here I am with a big hole in my leg that I taped up. I got a nice scar up here that I did a similar thing to, but she unbeknownst to me, caught an early flight, came home, and it looked like that someone had been murdered in our bedroom, in our master bedroom. The bed was completely a big pool of blood. My boots were full of, like, congealed blood. There was blood all over the carpet, the kitchen, I mean, the tile in the bathroom, the walls, everywhere. And where I had tried to walk around, where I could kind of trace my path around the house of what I was doing in a blackout. And she, obviously, you know, thought the worst. I mean, either someone was killed or I was killed or whatever, and I hadn't talked to her, and so she called me freaking out, and I, you know, and that's a scary, sad truth is what it is, that I had to go tell her it's not that big a deal. I just hurt myself, and I know, I'll clean it up. It's not a big deal, you know, but that's crazy. And that's horrific that she had to live through that kind of stuff. And talk about me being sick. I made her a very sick person for doing that for years, you know, 15 years. That she the last five haven't been quite that crazy, but then definitely not the last two and a half. But that's the kind of stuff that I did. And that I would just keep doing. That I would forget, you know, minimize it, forget about it, and I would go back out and swear that I wouldn't do it again, like I always did. And after one of those incidents, I went to. At one point, I was going to a counselor that my work provided for free, and they weren't obviously an alcoholic. They had me on a little system with a calendar where. She wanted me to write down a little beer bottle for every beer I had each day, and that made me really crazy. And while, you know, my wife saw it happening, and we found another counselor that had 30 years plus of sobriety. She did. I went reluctantly in there, and this guy asked me what was going on. I said, I don't understand what's going on. I used to be this nice guy, and I'm very impatient. I have no tolerance. I'm angry all the time, and I don't know what's going on. And he asked me a few questions, and, you know, he said, you know, you're an alcoholic, right? And you can never drink again if you're going to, you know, have any type of life. And I think I told him to F off or something. And he said, that's fine. Just go ahead, and it takes what it takes. You go do what you got to do, and when you've lost enough, whatever that is, your house, your wife, your job, you'll come back, or you'll go to somebody else, and then you'll either find help or not. And I was like, whoa, wait a second, what do you mean? And eventually, he kind of talked to I went back, because my wife, I was running out of my plans, and running out of ways for my wife to keep her, like, staying. And so I eventually went to AA, and I didn't want to go. It wasn't for myself. It was for her. I remember going to a couple meetings after drinking, being drunk. I remember sometimes I would go after the meeting and get drunk. And I also remember sometimes I would tell her I was going to go to a meeting, and I would sit in the parking lot and drink, and then I would go home. You know, I just, it wasn't for me. It was just to get her off my back. But I will say that I heard a few things in here. I heard some stories that kind of made me think a little bit. And so I went out and got more pain, and eventually I got to the point to where I really wanted to quit. I was going to that counselor, and after one particularly bad drunk, I went to him and I told him I was done. I said, that's it. I had something happen to me, and I'm done. And he said, okay, well, if you really believe that, why don't you sign this, and if you drink again, you're going to go to this treatment that I choose, and if you don't, then great. I said, okay, that's fine. I'm never drinking. I know it. I would have passed the lie detector test. I guarantee it. And so 2 days before Christmas, my wife's family's all coming down, and I was calling the guy saying, hey, I got drunk. And he shipped me off to a rehab in Tennessee. I got a lot out of that. It's part of my story. It's not part of everyone's AA story. It didn't make me sober. I basically had a lot of people up there saying that, you know, oh, you're that guy, you're with the star pupil and all that, but I really was picking some stuff up and not. I got home out of there and lasted about 30 days. at which point I drank all the Scope Listerine in the house, vanilla extract, cooking sherry, and everything we had, and it was just a mess, and I just wasn't ready yet. I kept coming back in here, and finally, I hadn't gotten a sponsor, and the treatment center told me that I needed to get a sponsor or I didn't have a chance. And that was one of the very good things that came out of there, was they said, you need AA and you need a sponsor. Another good thing was the family week got my wife into another program, and she needed that. But eventually I did get a sponsor. And I started to take the suggestions. And he told me that I needed to pray in the morning and call him every day, go to meetings, help others. At the time, he said, it doesn't have to be an alcoholic, just try to help somebody. And he said, read the literature, read the big book, and give thanks at night if you stayed sober. And he put these all on an index card and put it in my big book. And that's still in there. That's still my book bookmark in there. And that was over almost 5 years ago. I did all the stuff that he told me, with one exception, and that was don't drink. I don't know. I went to a meeting every day for a long time, and I did all this stuff, and we studied the big book word. We opened it up, we went to the first blank page, and he told me that's what I knew, and we went through each word and all that, and I just kept drinking. And I don't know if I just wasn't done yet, or I hadn't fully done step one, or what it was. But after working with him, and this, I love this guy. He's a big book thumper, and I still talk to him all the time. But after a while, he said, I'll be your sponsor if you want, but I think I'd be doing you a disservice because you're doing everything I say, and you're not getting something, and I'd really like for you to try to work with somebody else. And I said, okay, I'll do that. And this was a guy that one of the things he told me that I have never forgot, that I haven't forgotten, is we're looking at the big book, and I would have done anything this guy said, because he had it together, I thought. He said, I have a lot of strong opinions about this book, and I have a lot of strong opinions about other things. He goes, but if I ever say anything that contradicts this big book Alcoholics Anonymous, he goes, you stick with the big book and not me. And that's one thing that I could never argue with, and I respect him for that. After that, I asked this guy from Central, this bald guy, goatee, kind of mean looking, big, had a really tough story, but man, I could tell this guy had something that I wanted. Not everything I wanted, but he had something that I wanted, and I asked him to be my sponsor. And I'd kind of been around him. He lived over here, and we had parties at his house, and I'd been fishing with him, and I really respected what he had been through and how he had helped others, and he became my sponsor. And the same thing happened. I would do everything he said, and I'd keep drinking. Eventually... I'd been in here for about 2.5 years, putting together a little piece of time, picking up chips and everything, and I got drunk. I went out, I got a six-pack of Tall Boys of Budweiser, a bottle of Jack Daniels, and a bottle of Wild Irish Rose. And I remember, and I went out and I did it, and I knew I was going to do it at least a week before, and I didn't talk to anybody. I had already made my decision up, and there was no stopping me, and that's what I do when I want to drink. And the next day, the same thing, the remorse, the guilt, the all that stuff was overwhelming. I called him up, and I said, Ron, I said, I appreciate everything you've done for me. I said, you help a lot of people. This has nothing to do with you, but I'm sorry. I quit. I can't do this anymore. I picked up too many white chips. I'm just one of those people, for whatever reason, that's not going to get this, and I'm going to go find out what it's like to die an alcoholic death. And I'm in it. I'm like, I'm done. I quit. I'm going to go drink until I have enough or until I die. And You know, that was tough. The next day, he came to my house and he drug me to a meeting. And I went out of respect or habit. I don't know why, but I went. And then the next day, I went to a meeting. A couple weeks went by, and something strange happened. I just had this feeling, like, you know, that thing that goes off in my brain that starts to plan about how I could drink one more time and get away with it hasn't been there. And even when I put those months together, it was just because I somehow made it through that feeling that this time will be different. I'll be able to drink a drink and get away with it just one more time. If I can do that, then maybe I'll quit. That was my obsession, and it was always there, but for 2 weeks it hadn't been there. It had been gone. And I told Ron that, and he said, well, maybe God removed your obsession to drink. I said, oh, I don't know, you know. He was a white light experience type of person, and most of the people I'd known had been an educational variety, and I just didn't know. I wanted that so badly for so long that, but it's not something that you can just make happen. And a couple more weeks went by, and it hadn't been there. And a couple more weeks went by, and then finally I had some months under me, and it's like, but I was still doing all the stuff. I'm still praying in the morning, giving thanks at night when I didn't drink and all this stuff, but it's like, I don't want to drink anymore. And I'm like, this is a miracle. This is a miracle thing happening. And it was, you know, I had worked the steps with the guys before. I was working the steps with Ron, you know, worked through, did all my steps, 1 through 9, made amends, and was doing 10, 11, 12. And, but I just hadn't surrendered, or I just wasn't done. And for whatever reason, unlike a lot of people who their surrender was they you know, after a big drunk, mine was more after a big drunk, I quit AA. I just can't do this anymore, and that was it. And it that's been over 2.5 years ago, and I haven't had that desire, that planning thought come back. That is really a miracle. And I believe that from the bottom of my heart that God did that for me. I couldn't do it myself, and nobody else could do it, because I had some really, really good people working, trying, and it didn't happen. Some of the things I'd like to talk about are, you know, there's the getting sober. You've got to get a sponsor. You've got to do the steps to the best of your ability. And you have to be ready to get sober, and that's the miracle that happened to me. The other part of this is living sober, and that's, you know, living steps 10, 11, and 12, and doing this stuff each day to get a daily reprieve. And there's other things that I do, because there's the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous that is so important, and that is to get in. Even while when you're new, especially when you're new in here, get with a group of good guys that you think have something that you want, or that you can tell that are happy, or whatever it takes for you to feel comfortable with somebody, and get in that herd. You know, that herd thing where you're in the middle of the herd, you're not on the outside. The outside are the ones that get picked off. Get in the middle of the herd and start to have fun. I knew if I was ever able to stop drinking that it would be a miserable life. I really thought that. And the truth is, I never knew what being fun and happy was until I actually was able to experience peace and serenity that I'd never experienced before. You know, we're not a glum lot. I thought when we came in here, I saw people laughing. I thought they were laughing at me. But they're just happy. It's true. I thought I had friends. You know, drinking buddies were mostly what I had. I had a few friends, but I wasn't a very good friend to them, so they really, how could I expect them to really be true friends? And my friends in this program today are friends. We do stuff for each other. We care about each other. I can hug a guy and not think it's weird and mean it, and that's a cool thing. It is. I am learning how to be an adult. I'm still pretty new at that because I started drinking at a young age, and I really believe that my emotional growth and everything was completely stunted for decades. And I didn't know how to act like an adult, and I'm learning in making adult decisions, being a parent. All these things are gifts of doing this program, and it was so hard for me because I wanted to figure everything out. I really thought that I was smarter than everybody in here and I could do it on my own, which really was the reason I didn't get a sponsor for a while. And all that did was make me more and more lost. It's not something to figure out in my experience. It's just something to do. And once you're ready, if you do this with a sponsor and you do the suggestions, I guarantee you that things will change. And that's what this is all about. I went from an insecure, extremely selfish, miserable, sad person to a person who is okay, being. I could never sit still for 5 minutes, and not even close. And a lot of people know me, know I have a lot of energy and I move around a lot, but I actually can sit by myself and do nothing sometimes for a period of time, and that's okay. I can look in the mirror and not get that cold shiver that there's an evil person there, or a sick person, or a sad person, something. I have conversations with God today. I grew up in a religion, but it never really clicked with me. But the fact that this is a spiritual program was another thing that I couldn't argue with when people said, you don't have to have anybody's God. You just need a higher power, which it was an easy transition for me from my religious God that I sort of had to this. And then once I started really practicing that, it became a habit. It became pretty comfortable to me. It was weird at first. I didn't want to pray in front of my cats or my wife, and that doesn't bother me today. I had an experience about 4 months in where, and I know this is AA, but I was doing nicotine Copenhagen, like 2 cans a day, and something just came to me that, why are you doing this? You're addicted to this. It's probably killing you. And I really had an honest desire to stop that. I got down on my knees and I said, God, I don't want to do this anymore. Could you please help me not do this anymore? And I didn't dip that day. The next morning I got up and I said, can you please let me live today without the obsession for alcohol and chewing tobacco? And I'll tell you what, I've got chills right now. It was gone. That blew my socks off. And that was real. And I had minor headaches for about 2 weeks. I didn't have anything. And I tried to quit before. I dipped for 15 years. And one time I was off of it for 2 weeks, cold turkey. And my wife told me she wanted me to just dip again. and it was gone. And that, this program gave me the tools to be able to do that. Another thing is... somebody in here once told me, and I had started, the promises were coming true, and I was, good things were happening in my life, and somebody said, well, you need to take care of the things that God has given you, or why would you expect Him to give you any more? And that had a major effect on me, and recently I was thinking about that, and I said, God gave me this body. And for some reason, I think it applies to that too. And I started wanting to take care of my body more, and I started exercising and eating healthier. And it's amazing the results of that. I sleep better, and just these are all, this program is teaching me how to do all this stuff. You know, I know it's about not drinking. There's no doubt that if without that, everything else is gone. I'd be probably dead right now without that. But these are other things that this program has just taught me to do, and that they're all directly from here. I really believe in all the stuff that I did. I drove drunk, I don't know how many times, a lot, until I got that DUI where I really slowed down because I was afraid. I was a chicken, and I put myself in very bad positions. I went to bars and blackouts. I was in blackouts daily, and I lived through all this. I really believe that God brought me through all that for a reason, and the obvious reason to me is to help others that are alcoholics, because I have that unique, well, not unique, but compared to normal people, I have that unique experience and ability to sit down with somebody and say, I did that, and here's what someone else that did that told me to do, and so I did that, and this is the result. And so that's, you know, what I try to do is try to help other alcoholics just by telling them, yeah, here's what I did, and this was the result. Here's what I did, and this was the other result, which you don't want to do. And you know, that's just another gift of this program. I guess I'll wrap it up with, I used to come in, and people would say that they're a grateful recovering alcoholic, and I honestly would think bullshit. There is no way that you're really grateful. You might be happy that, you know, all the consequences are happening, but you're glad that you're an alcoholic, really. And today I honestly can say that, because it took the pain that I had to go through from alcoholism to get me to do this. I don't know what else would ever do that to a person. I'm sure it happens, but I think that's the thing that brought me to spirituality. And let me tell you, to have, before, when I couldn't live in my own skin and I was thinking that everyone's out to get me, making fun of me, and all that was just made up in my head, to have windows of peace and serenity that I have today is a miracle. And it's not always that way. You know, life happens. I sometimes need to feel more pain to bring me back to where I need to be. But I do have windows of peace. And I have real friends today. And I look in the mirror and I can smile most of the time. And it's a beautiful life. So if you are out there and, you know, you think you're too smart for the program, you don't think it'll work, you don't believe in any higher power, if you just give it a chance, be just willing enough, get a sponsor, do these steps, and I guarantee if you do that, things will change. Thanks.